the name Hugo Pinnell. That's because the last time he was in the newspapers was probably in 1971 or 1976, when he was tried as a member of the famous San Quentin Six, six young black prisoners facing assault charges stemming from battles with guards at the notoriously repressive California prison. Yet that wasn't the beginning, nor the end of things. Hugo Pinnell, known by his friends as Yogi, came to the U.S. as a 12-year-old from a small town on the eastern coast of Nicaragua. If he knew the hell he would face in America, would he have left the country of his birth? We'll never know. He came, and he has spent the last 42 years in prison, 34 of them in solitary. He hasn't had a write-up in 24 years, after a lifetime in some of the most repressive joints in America. Why so long? Why so many years? The answer, not surprisingly, is politics. Hugo was a student and comrade of the legendary Black Panther Field Marshal, the late George Jackson, and worked to organize other black prisoners against the racist violence and prison conditions of the 60s and 70s. Consider this. When Hugo was sent to prison, Lyndon Baines Johnson was president. The bombing in the Vietnam War was intensifying, and Martin Luther King Jr. was still alive. Of his introduction to the prison system, Yogi would later write, "In 1964, I was 19 years old. I turned myself into the authorities to clarify the charges against me. The deputies beat me several times, and the public defender and the judge influenced my mother into believing that I would be sentenced to death unless I pled guilty. I pled guilty to the charge of rape, with the understanding that I would be eligible for parole after 6 months. When I arrived at the California Department of Corrections, I was informed that I had been sentenced to 3 years to life." This is Mumia Abu-Jamal.
This is Emory Douglas, revolutionary artist, activist, former member of the Black Panther Party, 1967-1981. This is in memory of Hugo Yogi Pinnell. He was a childhood friend, and we grew up together in San Francisco and hung out in the Fillmore District of San Francisco, where I lived and where there was a very large African-American community during that time. On several occasions, I remember going to his house, and we also went to parties, played basketball at the playground. Also, we were used to shoot pool and also dice, trying to make a little money on the side during our teenage years. Most everybody back in the day in the streets knew Yogi not as Yogi, but as Hugo. I recall when he started identifying more with his Nicaraguan roots, he began to hang out with his family much more. Thereafter, we would run across paths off and on, but he always had a good spirit, joking, talking with those he knew. And even then, as a youngster, he was very, very strong-willed. I recall when Yogi got arrested, the word out on the street was he was with family that committed the rape, not him, but he wouldn't testify to that in court. It was many years after Yogi was incarcerated, I saw him for the first time since our days as youth in the courtroom as one of the San Quentin Six defendants. He was chained and shackled like a modern day slave, but by no means was he broken in spirit. He too, like comrade George Jackson, had transformed himself into a freedom fighter by any means necessary.
This is the voice of Hugo Pinnell.
I've been in the shoes since they opened in 86, from Tehachapi to Coburn to here. I've been here since 1990. And at least in Tehachapi and Coburn, they had yards that you can go to and exercise with other people and work out and get fresh air. And so you push them, they push you. So it was good to, you know, you could stay in shape like that. But when I come here in 1990, I realized that they don't have no yards, that it's just like an alleyway, and you stay in your cell all the time, and you find yourself sitting around a lot. So watching more TV than you want to, trying to find some programs that you can enjoy so you can make it bearable, you see? So when I got here in 1990, I'm thinking that all I had to do was 4 more years, and they had to release me. because I'm under the indeterminate sentence, you know, way back from the 60s. And then, even in the sanguine six, when they gave me my new sentence in 76, it was for assault, 9 years to life. So when I went to the first hearing in 85, I'm expecting them to tell me that they're going to set a hearing for me, like they did all the indeterminate sentence guys, that I'm not really a lifer, that I'm just, you know, not under the new determinate sentence, that I'm not really a lifer because assault doesn't constitute murder or anything like that. So, but none of that, they just told me, they started denying me 1 year, 2 years, 3 years. So I said, okay, you know what I'm going to do? I'm just going to wait a month. And I'm expecting 93, 94, 95. But then in 95, when I went in there, I got a lot of clean time. I did all your time. Legally, I'm not bound to you anymore. And then they hit me with a hard one, 5 years. And when that hurt me, I didn't want nobody to know how hurt I was, my mom and I, and I didn't want them to suffer. So, but that kind of slowed me down.
My name is Suniata Tate. I'm a comrade of Hugo Pinnell, who's no longer with us. Hugo was killed at New Folsom. We had heard some months ago that he would be killed if transferred to the mainland there. I am of the opinion that his killing could have been prevented by the guards if they had wanted to, since they knew that he was a target. There's no way to get around that. His life was a living hell, but he endured. 70 years old, more than 50 years locked down. He was no monster. He was a revolutionary. They have killed him, but they have not killed his spirit. Hugo, you live on. Hugo Pinnell live on in memories that others share. Our brother is dead, murdered through conspiracy of the CDC, no matter who actually carried out the hit. I said that the CDC is responsible because they had received letters warning them that Hugo would be killed if he was released to the mainland at New Folsom Prison. Why not send him to some prison where there was no known threats against his life? Hugo is not the monster that is being portrayed in social media, news media. In 1965 at Vacaville State Prison is where I first met Hugo. We both were in guidance center. When prisoners first come into the prison system, each is first sent to a reception center to be evaluated before being transferred to the joint where they are scheduled to spend most of their time. Vacaville is one of those centers. Besides being introduced to each other, we would just see each other around the yard. It was only later on that we would get to know each other on a deeper level. From the guidance center, we both went to different prisons. From time to time, I would hear about him standing up against racism and white supremacy. I seem to remember him being at San Quentin some of that time before he came back there in 1970-71. During the San Quentin 6 trial, I really got to know Hugo. He was, as we all were, under a lot of stress. His stress was heavier than mine's because he had the additional load of being beaten on regular occasions, tortured, physically tortured, having clubs stuck up his rectum by guards, prison guards. My friend and comrade of more than 45 years has been killed. He has passed on, never to return to planet Earth. So long, my friend. Your journey has been long and arduous. Truly a warrior's trial. No longer do you have to suffer the decades of not touching or being touched by another human being other than your adversary. No longer do you have to endure the hatred of people who don't even know you and never dare to love you. You have proven that not only is black beautiful, but that brown is also just as beautiful. You have represented George and Tay. Well, I salute you. I salute you. I salute you. Long live the gorilla.
I gotta be free. I keep telling myself, I'm gonna be like Martin Luther King did. I remember when he, the night before he got shot, he was made a speech and say, I've been to the mountaintop. I saw the promised land. I didn't know what he was talking about then, but I realized that when you keep struggling and keep working and you're being honest and truthful with yourself and with the people and your goals, all of a sudden you feel like, you know what, I'm afraid. I don't want to die young. I want to live to take care of my children, my wife, my people. But you know what? But there's something inside of me that makes me feel really good. I'm not afraid of any man anymore. You see, it's a human being like Malcolm who could change it. I remember when Malcolm first started. By the time he got killed and assassinated, he was talking about human rights. He realized then that you can't be in a world where only white people are free, only black people. Everybody has it. Freedom is for everybody, and you have to push for everybody.
My name is David Johnson, and I was a member of the San Quentin Six. And the six of us were charged with August 21st incident in the Adjustment Center at San Quentin Prison. It was in the San Quentin Adjustment Center that I first met Hugo Pinnell when he was sent there from Soledad Prison. When I first met him, I fell in love with that brother. His spirit, the gleam in his eye, I was inspired by him. And George Jackson could be considered the spokesman for the prison movement. But I would say, because of Hugo's spirit and energy level, he definitely was the spirit of our movement. When we were locked up together, we spent many hours of talking. It was through him I learned about the struggle in Nicaragua, about the corrupt Somoza regime, and the history of repression that had been taking place there. When I was released from prison, I helped people who were putting forth and making the public aware of the struggle that was taking place in Nicaragua. Yogi told me about the struggle in Nicaragua before it was even a common cry in the leftist community. When I got out, as I said, I worked to try to get the Nicaraguan government to see if they could work out an exchange for Hugo. He fought tirelessly to better condition, but not just black prisoners, but all prisoners. He suffered at the hands of prison guard immense brutality as they sought to break his spirit, and in breaking his spirit, break our movement. But he resisted, and I was impressed and inspired by his resilience to resist those efforts to break him, to break his spirit. And as George said, for years he was in the crosshairs. We witnessed murderous conditions on the yard of Soledad Prison in 1970, and again in 2015, we witnessed murderous conditions on the yard of Folsom Prison. It is sad that a brother who fought so tirelessly to change conditions and better things for prisoners, that he would suffer at the hands of other prisoners in conjunction with the prison administration. We've lost a courageous brother, but his spirit will live on. May others be inspired by his efforts to free up humanity from oppression, injustice, and inhuman conditions. Long live the spirit of Hugo Pinnell.
Plus, remember that at one time, Nicaragua won the independence too for a while. So I was getting support from those people in the Sandinistas, and they were sending me pictures of young girls, 16, 17, with young boys in a struggle, and they were, you know, so they kept my spirit alive, and they said, hold on, brother, we're going to try to bring the native song back, you know, so, you know, in the 80s, the ambassador was trying to, you remember in 1985, 86, when the Sandinistas shut down a helicopter from the United States, and they captured some Americans, they told them, we'll give it back to you in good faith if you give us our son. But then when they, in Christmas of 86, when they brought the Americans back, the United States reneged and said, you know what? On second thought, we're never going to give you Hugo Pinnell, but we'll give you some money. And that's what they did. And at that time, you know, I was thinking I was getting ready, you know, because young girls and things, they would write to me and say, we're ready for you to come and contribute to a revolutionary society, to work with the youngsters, and, you know, you got the young spirit, and so we want to share with you. You see? And I was ready. I was so excited. My wife was with me, and she said, Shirley said, let's go, you know, let's go and start anew. But fortunate for me is that it's been the few people in my life that I met, you know, along with my mom and my family, that has kept me together, that has kept me pushing, you see? Because my mom said, okay, now that you're alone, your wife passed away, and I hope you really understand what is this struggle that you got yourself into, because that's what you're going to have to rely on. He said, and I, you know, she made it clear for me. She said, I'm always going to be there for you. And if you really mean that what you say about love, what love does for you, okay, then I'm going to give it all to you. And then if you want me to be proud of you, because she used to be angry with me for many years, show me. Show me about this new man that you say you're building. Show me. Don't show me for 20 years, for 30 years. Show me for as long as we're alive. Show me. Even if you don't, even if they don't let you out, you show me. You see? So I said, okay, Mom, let me go to work.
Hasta siempre, Hugo. Solidarity forever. And now we are saddened by your sudden departure from us. Adios. Adios. Solidarity left you when it should have counted for something more and for what your long imprisoned life stood for. Solidarity forever. Now all your struggles to be free have failed, and only death, and an inglorious and violent death, has claimed you at the hands of the cruel prison system. La luta continúa. Hasta siempre, Hugo. Vato, órale.
I started something, I got on the freedom train, and I'm going all the way with it. You see what I mean? New me will tell you, Yogi being there when he's working out, he's singing songs when he's working out. Like, I don't know if you ever hear about this, impressions, temptations, keep on pushing. People get ready for, I changed words, for the train to freedom. And then I talk, I say, you don't need a color. You don't need a race. You don't need a mixture. You don't need permission. You don't have to sign your name on anything. Like the song says, you don't need no ticket. You just get on board. But if you get on board, you got to have the willingness to be free. You have to try to understand what that means to you, because other people might come around and tell you, this is my definition of freedom. That's not good enough. You see, I don't want to shortchange myself. I'm holding on this, in this big rail in the train, and I'm holding on. You see, so if a bullet don't kill me, if an accident don't kill me, I gotta keep doing, now I gotta do it for the brothers and the sisters and the people who believe in freedom, who died before me. I gotta do it for them now, you see, because they're not here anymore. And they believe in this. They say one day it's gonna happen. It's not gonna happen in a lifetime, it's not gonna happen in the next lifetime, but it's gonna happen. So stay in it, stay in it. I said, okay. And then I realized that not that I'm just doing it for them, I'm doing it for me too. I want to be free, you see? But it's not necessarily going to the street. Being free inside of me.
Just get on board. All you need is faith to hear the dealers humming. Don't need no ticket. You just thank the Lord.